I hope everyone had a happy Thanksgiving, but I have a question I want to ask everyone, and I want to ask us to be deeply honest regarding this question, and it is this. Just how grateful are we to God? How much of gratitude is a part of our life? This week, Americans celebrated the holiday of Thanksgiving, and the day is for the purpose of reminding us to be grateful to God. But yet I find in the news, and I find in the talk of the public, and I find that in our nation today, there is not very much gratitude. They're not as thankful, I think, as we used to be. Most, I think, have forgotten who it is they are to thank. One reason, I think, is because we're living in a very dangerous time, a very, very time of great fear for many people in our civilization and our citizenry. We're watching values and behaviors change as never before, and it's all around us, and we're fulfilling an ancient prophecy. And let's go to 2 Timothy for a scripture that most of us are familiar with, but the thing is that you and I are not just familiar with this. We're actually living it. It's a part of an apostasy that was going to take place at the end of the age. And it says this in 2 Timothy and chapter 3 and verse 1. Know this also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. Why? Why is our civilization, why are our generation experiencing perilous times? The answer, I think, begins in verse 2. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, and unholy. You know, the people at the end of the age, are going to be remarkably, our people today are remarkably unthankful. If you think about it, we're living in a commercial world. You know, our nation has taken its prosperity for granted. Vast numbers of people now feel entitled to a piece of the American pie. And that's what's happening today. Immigrants want to come here, but they don't want to come here because this nation's law is based on God's law, and it's fair, and it's a place of opportunity because of that. They want to come here to get their piece of the American prosperity that has existed for so many years. That's why they're coming. And so the whole point is we're forgetting where we came from. We're forgetting who to be thankful for in all of this. Besides being unthankful, it says that individuals will be lovers of their own selves. So I'm looking up the word love of self in Google. And there's 41 million responses that I got. And it didn't take long for me to get the message that they were giving. Psychology Today said this: self-acceptance is unconditional. It's free of any qualifications. GoodTherapy.com wrote this: who we are is more important than what we do. We are valuable. Nothing can change that. What we want always matters. HelpYourselfTherapy.com advocates this. Look into a mirror and tell yourself, I love you. Now, there is something that we can be thankful for about mirrors. They only show the outside, not the inside. You know. Henry Ward Beecher said this at one time: pride slays Thanksgiving, but a humble mind is the soil out of which thanks naturally grows. A proud man is seldom a grateful man, for he never thinks he gets as much as he deserves. So many people are becoming like that. They don't think about what they have and aren't grateful for it all. In the book Wisdom, George Johnson wrote about Andrew Carnegie. There's an interesting story there. Andrew Carnegie built an enormous amount of wealth one of the most wealthy men first in America. And he had a relative. When he died, he gave the relative $1 million. And that relative cursed him from that day forward. Now, why would he curse him? The answer is because he gave him $1 million, but he gave charity $350 million. He wanted more. We always want more. That's the thing about us. Ecclesiastes 1, Ecclesiastes and verse 1 speaks of this. And it's a familiar scripture, but it makes so much sense, you know. Carnegie himself had a very famous quote that I want to read to you, and I want you to think about it. Man must have no idol. We know that, don't we? And the amassing of wealth is one of the worst species of idolatry. And yet that is exactly what our society seeks. We are a capitalist society, and as such, we seek more and more. For us, it's money, it's our income that matters. What kind of car you drive. People judge themselves today by the kind of clothes they wear, by their title at work, by the kind of car they drive, and by how big their house is. That's America. Always trying to get more. That's what we're about. Making money matters. It's the basis of all advertising. In fact, they measure themselves by this. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 8. Here's the point. All things are full of labor. Man can't enter it. But the eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That's our human nature. It's exploded. It's like flayed open here. We're never satisfied. No matter how many movies you see, you always want to see the latest and greatest. No matter how much money you make, you might think, well, I get a raise. I make $40,000 a year now, and then it doesn't take very long, and you forget your joy and gratitude for the raise, and you start thinking, well, 50 would be better. That's how we are. That's how human nature is. In like manner, we celebrate Thanksgiving once a year. But are we really a grateful people? Do we celebrate Thanksgiving and then eventually in time we devolve back into wanting more? Is that what we do? Do we forget to be thankful repeatedly or consistently? Because ingratitude can be like a poison to our human nature. It can be like a poison. It colors our world with negativity, and it brings unhappiness instead of gratitude, which brings happiness. They never cease complaining sometimes. People, you've seen people all the time, never cease complaining. Not having enough water was the first, you know, thing I think that happened with Israel. They started complaining about that. Then they wanted meat, so God fed them until it was coming out their nostrils, he says. You know, they contested the leadership of Moses because why should you have power and we don't have power? Who gave you that authority? That's what they were doing. Let's look over here at Numbers, if you will, number 16. Number 16. Imagine this taking place. It seems almost impossible after everything that happened. Number 16, 1 through 3. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan, and Abiram, the son of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses. This is no small group. They rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. Here's what they said to them. You take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore, lift you up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. Man, if this doesn't speak to us today. Everybody's doing their own thing. We have all these hundreds of splits because they don't want anyone to have authority. No one wants to submit to a leader. And that's what they did in this day. Moses fell on his face before God and he just put it in God's hands. And he said to these men after that, you meet with us tomorrow with your censers. That is a symbol of giving offering of incense to God. Meet with your censer. And God will choose the one who he wants to be the leader in this case. Number 16:12. Look at some of the response here of the people. 16:12, and Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which said, we will not come up. It's a small thing. Is it a small thing that you've brought us up out of the land that flows with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness? Except, on top of that, you make yourself altogether a prince over us. Moreover, you haven't brought us into a land that flows with milk and honey or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We'll not come up. We'll not come up. We're not coming up. You said to come up, and we're not coming up. Ingratitude can reach enormous levels in a people, it seems. And it can lead, and will lead, ingratitude will, to a terrifying, terrible end for anyone. These men chafed against the leadership of Moses, not knowing it was from God, and they weren't satisfied with the positions that they held, and they wanted Moses to share that power with them. And you know what's funny? They had witnessed repeated miracles at the hand of Moses over and over. 10 plagues in Egypt over what I think was probably an entire year's time. You know, there was the spoiling of the Egyptians, that here they are giving them all of the wealth that they had. The parting of the Red Sea, and Moses is holding up his staff and the sea parts, and they're watching this, you know. And here there was water made sweet at Marah. All of this for a witness. All of it. They saw all of it. And yet they still weren't satisfied. They're going to challenge Moses. He told them to meet him the next day with their censers in 28:28. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own hand. If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing, and if the earth opens up her mouth and swallows them up with all that pertains to them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord himself. And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder, and all that was under them. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and the men that appertained to Korah, and all their goods. And they, and all that apprehended to them, went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them. And they perished from among the congregation, and all Israel were round about them, fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. And then there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. That was a pretty profound demonstration. And are we going to need something like that to realize how grateful we should have been to God for everything that we have been given, for the hope that lies before us? What's it going to take for us? Let's look at Ezekiel, and I go here, 28, of course, Ezekiel 28, and I go here for a reason, and that is this. Korah's sin was the same exact sin that is of old. It's the same as the original sin, whose author was Satan himself. It's wanting more. The origin goes right back to the devil himself to gain more and more for himself. He instituted merchandising, you know, kind of like Wall Street today. Ezekiel 28, verse 14. You are the anointed cherub that covers, and I've set you so. You are on the holy mountain of God. You've walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created until iniquity was found in you. Can you imagine walking in the splendor of God's throne, being there with him, with the myriad of angels, and being a member of high rank among all of them? And it was not enough. Not enough. Wanted more. So by the multitude of your merchandise, they fill the midst of you with violence, and you've sinned. Therefore, I'll cast you as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty, but you've corrupted your wisdom by reason of your brightness. I'll cast you to the ground. I'll lay you before kings. And you have defiled your sanctuaries by the multitude of your iniquities. By the iniquity of your traffic, I will bring you forth a fire from the midst of thee, and it shall devour you, and I'll bring you to ashes on the earth in the sight of all of them that behold you. And so it was his trafficking, it was his merchandising, and I believe if there's anyone who's going to be included in that second resurrection of Gog and Magog that come down, it's going to be those people that after 50 years have to give back what they've acquired or merchandised to get from other people. They're going to be angry about it because you never are satisfied. We always want more. And he is the first one to do that. And we're following in those same single steps today. Isaiah 14. That's my point. Look at what he has influenced our world to be like today. Just think about it. Would we be this way if he wasn't influencing us, if he wasn't sending a spirit out all the time of more and more? So Satan eventually gained control through his merchandising and trafficking. He gained control of the entire earth. But again, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. He wanted God's throne. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How are you cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For you said in your heart, I'll ascend into heaven. I'll exalt my throne above the stars of God, above the angels, all of them. I'll sit upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I'll ascend above the heights of the clouds. I'll be like, or I will be, the Most High. Can you imagine it? Can't you kind of understand why we have to suffer on this earth today so that we understand the end of all these things? That this is where it all ends. In war and conflict and death and destruction. So Satan's angels attempted to take with him God's throne, and there was war in heaven, and the entire universe was devastated by it, and the earth was destroyed. And I say this very clearly, that anyone who reads these verses, any minister, it should strike fear in their hearts to teach their people that they are superior to anybody else. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is the same spirit right here that people have today in a fractured church of God, of all places. It's the same thing. Judges 8. These things don't happen because we're grateful for what we have. And you know the truth that we should be grateful every day. We ought to pray about our gratitude every day. Sometimes we forget God's kindness, and I think some days we forget what he's given to us, and we act sometimes as if we're on our own. We don't need him. We can handle it. The human tendency is so real, and it's so easy for us to forget. God is so easy to forget what he's done for us. I remember a minister in the Church of God who was healed from being a paraplegic. He could not walk, and then he was healed and was able to walk. And after a few years, he forgot and he left the church. Can you imagine that? We just see it with Moses. Everything he did, amazing miracles. Maybe just forget, because we get focused on what? Ourselves. That's what happens. So anyway, that's my point today. This is the pattern throughout all of human history, and it's been repeated over and over and over and over again. Consider how God used Gideon to save Israel from the Midianites. And as soon as Gideon died, what do you think happened? People forgot. Judges 8, verse 32. Judges 8, and Gideon, the son of Joash, died in a good old age, and he was buried in the sepulcher of Joash's father in Ophrah of the Abizarites. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again and went whoring after Balaam and made Baal-berith their god. As soon as he died. It didn't take years, 10 years, decades. It didn't take a century. As soon as he died, they went back to Baal worship. And we wonder how that can happen. But it's happening to us. It's happening to us if we don't see it and don't catch it. So later there was a time when the people wanted a king. If we'll go to 1 Samuel 9. Remember when the people weren't happy, the way things were going? They wanted to have a king because the other nations all had a king, and they wanted to be a king, have a king so they could be like the other nations and have the respect like the other nations so seemingly carried. And so God was going to give them their wish, and he was going to give it in spades. The man's name was Saul. He had everything going for him in 1 Samuel 9. Now there was a man named Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechorath, the son of Aphiah, and Benjamite of mighty power. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man, goodly. And there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he. From his shoulders upward, he was higher than any of the people. Just imagine that. Somebody that good looking, somebody that tall, everybody looks up to him. I remember a long time ago that I was reading a book on success, and they said when you're taller, there's an automatic tendency to look up to people, and they get advances often in business a lot easier. And so it was that the people looked at him, and he was lifted up to be the king over Israel. In 1 Samuel 13 and in verse 13, what did he do? The more he grew in ego, the more he thought of himself as being something, the more he forgot God, the more he became the center of his own world. And it led to disobedience. And Samuel finally said to Saul, "You've done foolishly. You've not kept the command of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now would the Lord have established your kingdom upon Israel forever." His children would be there today if he would have followed God. "But now the kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be captain over his people, because you have not kept that which the Lord commanded you." But you understand my point about thinking about self, telling yourself you love yourself, telling yourself that what you want is what matters. Do you realize that that is what was going on inside Saul in one way or another? So that all that mattered was him and what he wanted, even so much that he would disregard God? And so maybe we aren't as blatant as that, but I know in all cases I've watched through the history of decades of God's church, this happens to people in the church. We start focusing on ourselves, we start focusing on what we want, and we're never satisfied. We'll always want more instead of being thankful all the time for what we have. It's so important. Over and over, Israel forgot to be grateful. Time after time, they forgot to remember God's blessings and all they had been given. So finally, the 10 tribes abandon God altogether. They go totally into Baal worship, and he has no choice. He takes them captive, and they're lost to history to this day. And then Judah lasts for about another 100 years, and the king of Judah marries the daughter of Jezebel, who's the priestess of Baal. And so they sinned even worse, the scriptures say, and he had to take them into captivity as well. And so it's just amazing that people could get so off track with all kinds of examples before them. How does it happen? It happens because we're thinking about ourselves and what we want all the time. It's always running in RAM in the background of our minds. It's always there, and it'll come out time after time. So God brought back Judah from Babylon and their captivity, but he didn't do it because they were better. He didn't do it because they repented. He did it because of his promise that Christ would come from Judah. And so Judah had to exist as a nation. Deuteronomy 8. So people forget. People forget. And my point is, my fear is we're forgetting today, and it could end up in terrible consequences for us. And I want us to just think about this in a certain context today. You and I have been warned. We have been warned over and over and over, and we've read story after story after story of what happens in this book. And we've seen the lives and the examples of others in our lives. And so it's vital, isn't it? Isn't it clear? Is there any question that this is wrong to do, that we're headed in a wrong direction? Listen to what God says. Long ago, centuries ago, Deuteronomy 8 and verse 10, when you've eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he's given you. Beware that you forget not the Lord your God in keeping his commandments and his judgments and statutes, which I command you this day, lest when you've eaten and are full, and you've built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when the herds and flocks multiply, and the silver and gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought you forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which the fathers knew not, that he might humble you, and that he might prove you, to do you good at the latter end. And you say in your heart, if you say in your heart, my power and my might has gotten me this wealth, but you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he that gives you the power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore unto you, as it is this day. Don't think our power got us this wealth in America. It isn't Yankee ingenuity. It isn't that we're smarter than anybody else. And today's history that we're making each day proves that. The decisions we make now that we push God out of our country, the decisions that we're making today in our government are completely foolish, foolish decisions that are self-destructive. That's what's happening because we forgot what he said. We forgot what he said. Wednesday's news carried a list of people of what they were grateful for. You know, I was looking on the internet and looking at different lists. What should you be grateful for? And I'm just going to give you an example of some. They spoke of being grateful for their family. That's nice. They spoke of being grateful for their jobs, their friends, their homes, grateful for their health. That's something we should be grateful for. And their investments, their cell phones and the internet, the armed forces, movies and entertainment, and welfare. Nobody mentioned God. I'm sure there were some lists that mentioned God. Somewhere you'd find them. I looked at about three different lists of what to be grateful for. No one mentioned God. Romans 1. We are beginning, I think, to look more and more like ancient Israel, ancient Judah. More and more. We don't appreciate the blessings that we do have like we should. You know, this year there was Black Friday. There were scuffles and fist fights and brawls across America at all the different Walmarts and different places, Kentucky, Colorado, and different states, you know, fighting over who's going to get this or that gift, you know, at a lower price. Just amazing, you know. Romans 1 and verse 21. Because when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. You know, if God were anywhere near us, when he was on Mount Sinai, the mountain burned, rock melted. You understand? Just from the majesty and glory that came out of him. And we forget who he is. We forget the power he holds. We forget the things he's given us in his mercy and his kindness. We do it, and I do it. I know this because I do it. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Their foolish heart was darkened, and we lose wisdom, and we've lost it. We have lost it. We now stand, what I believe, in the front of the worst tragedy that's ever, ever been faced by our people. Yet we actually act, though, as if we don't understand what's going on. You know, mankind has tried every form of government that exists, and every single one of them has failed. Every one of his attempts at government has failed. And I say this, it's all related to never being satisfied with what they have. And almost every government that has existed has fallen for the same reasons, and I want to talk about that a little bit today. America grew great because it was based on God's law and his way of life, and we received his blessing. Now we've become a nation that is based on political correctness. That seems to be the most important part of our life today. I want to talk for a minute about another country. And that country was ancient Rome. It was so powerful in their time. They thought that civilization would always continue to exist. But you know, the rulers, they knew how to control the people in their mind. They knew what the people wanted more. And so they began to give them a dole, a bread line developed that they made to make sure the people were loyal to them. So they would give them some bread or they would give them grain. At first, 50,000 people stood in line to get the lower-priced grain. And then this number began increasing more and more as time went on, until it became pretty huge. In fact, the line got so big and included so many people, the Senate wrote that they dared not stop it because they were afraid of the revolt of the people. And so anyway, when Claudius, he ran for office on a free wheat. We're not going to charge you less money now. We're going to give you free wheat. And of course he won because everyone would vote for him because they want the free wheat. So anyway, based on the government, he won the government offering free wheat. He won the election. When Caesar came to power, 320,000 persons were now in that same line. In time, people got 2 pounds of bread, pork, and olive oil. And their system became a political monster in time. No politician dared oppose giving the people free food. No one could even think of opposing such an idea. So Rome experienced something that we, I think, are experiencing. That is, they also had an army that was located in far-flung areas of the world that they would conquer people, and then they would bring in slaves. Then the large farmers in Rome would use these slaves as very cheap labor, and then pretty soon the independent farmers couldn't compete, and so they went out of business. They could no longer farm. And so now we had these big farmers, big farms, working with cheap labor, and you know what happened? They're working for such cheap labor, they got lazy, and they produced less and less. And so the economy got worse and worse, and finally, the emperor said, we're going to have to put a price on everything, and it held the price. Domitian put a price on every single thing in Rome, a set price. You couldn't move it up, and you couldn't move it down. There was no competition, and guess what happened? Production stopped. Because you couldn't make things and sell them for the price the government wanted to sell them for, because they wanted to please the people that way. Eventually, the soldiers were allowed to loot the people. Excessive taxes destroyed the sources of revenue. Tremendous inflation ensued, and it destroyed the country. In 100 years, their inflation rate went from, it went up 1,500%. Yeah, 1,500%. But it took 100 years, but you understand what kind of inflation that is. But look at our inflation. It used to be a dollar was worth $35, right? Worth of gold, something like, no. $35 was worth an ounce of gold. That's what it was. But look at how much it's worth today. You understand we're heading in that very same direction is my point. And that's my issue. Eventually, Rome became so weakened that barbarians, illiterate barbarians, were able to come in and destroy that nation. And the beast suffered a deadly wound. Rome was killed by the barbarians. Now, why I say this is that I think our entitlement society that we have today is following a very similar pattern. It was 2012 when Mitt Romney was running for president, and he said something when he was talking to one of those town meetings. He said, I know I can't reach some people. And by that I mean, the people that depend on government, that are entitled to health care, to food and housing and so on. That statement lost him the election. They broadcast that all over America. And all the people who were dependent on the government in one way or another were certainly not going to vote for him because they wanted more, not less. More, not less. So he lost the presidency based on that statement. In 2008 campaign, one of President Obama's supporters said this, I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. If I help him, he's going to help me. And I remember there was a woman on TV, everybody remembers this, Obama phone, Obama phone. He had given 30,000 phones out to people who were on government assistance programs, 30,000 phones, and then he gave phones to prisoners in our jails. And so far the cost is $2.2 billion for the phones, but you know what they're talking about now? Free internet. Everybody deserves internet, don't they? And so people want the government to give them free internet. Under this administration, food stamps have increased at unbelievable rates. In 2009, we suspended a law putting a time limit on the eligibility for food stamps. And a congressional report said adults receiving stamps doubled that year. Now, one in five Americans relies on the federal government. In 2011, 151 million got aid from at least one program, some of one government program. 49.5% of Americans do not pay any income tax at all. But isn't it following the same pattern? Give us what we want. We'll elect you. Just give us what we want. Now, the largest part of the government's expenditures our assistance programs. There's 35 states in which they now claim that you can make more money on welfare than you can by working. 35 states say that. Entitlement spending is over $7,400 per man, woman, and child in America today. You know, this used to be a safety net out of mercy and kindness and compassion that we would help people that were in trouble. And now it's become entitlement. You owe it to us. You owe it to us. And so now, you know what? We're having protests. Oh, about Muslims we are in colleges. But you know what else the colleges are now protesting and demanding? Free tuition. They're demanding it. Free tuition. They're affecting these entitlements, affecting the character of our citizens in this nation today. More and more you see murders and fighting taking place, people killing police. You see black and white fighting going on. You know, it won't be long until we too are destroyed by barbarians because of our selfishness, because of our self-centeredness, because we want more and more, and we want people to give to us. We don't want to give to others. We don't want to pay back. None of that. We'll just cancel your college debt, you know, your loan, you know. But I want you to consider carefully. I'm going to say something next that, whether you heard any part of the sermon, I want everybody to wake up if I bored you to death. Wake up. I want you to listen to what this man said because it makes so much sense. Stephen Furtick said this: you cannot be grateful for something you feel entitled to. You can't. And that's where our nation is headed. We think we're entitled. We think we deserve it. You know, most of our nation now feels that we're entitled to something. People are coming to our country now, and because they want to feel entitled to something too, they want, and they give it to them. They give it to come in, bring migrants in. Of course, that'll be a nice voting block if they can finagle that some way. But we have lost emotional stability as well. This is what's happening. The National Center for Health Statistics wrote this: the rate of antidepressant use in this country among teens and adult and ages 12 and older increased by 400% between 88 and 2008. 400%, they say. We're all getting on antidepressants. It's really amazing. New York Times reported over the past two decades, the use of antidepressants has skyrocketed. 1 in 10 Americans now takes an antidepressant medication among women in their 40s and 50s. The figure is 1 in 4. We're not happier just getting things given to us. It's not going to make us happy. You know what makes a person happy? It's a secret in life. Making progress towards a transcendent goal, something bigger than yourself. That makes a person happy. Making progress towards a worthwhile goal. That's what we've lost. Accepting welfare, staying on the couch, watching TV, playing video games. You know, all that's happened to our country today. Our people are becoming emotionally sick in life. They've lost a sense of any kind of bigger purpose in themselves. They've lost the sense of real and meaningful values. And I say this: we cannot and we must not be affected by this society's values that they have. We've got to keep it apart. We are affected and hit by it every day. It's everywhere. We can't let it rub off. We can't let it leave its mark on us. We people, of all people, have to be a thankful people, a grateful people. We've got to do that. It's not about unconditional acceptance of ourselves. It's not looking in a mirror and saying, I love you. It's not thinking that we're important or that getting what we want is what matters. That is not our issue. Ephesians 5, if you will. We no longer know what leads us to happiness and what leads us to real, lasting, emotional success and happiness. Ephesians 5. Few would ever consider what the basis is to attain these things, and that is really gratitude. Thankfulness is not just about being grateful for some of the things you've received. It actually should be. I really mean this. Gratitude should be a Christian discipline. When we go down and pray each day to our God, we should thank Him, not just for His Spirit, not just for His calling, but for little things in the day, for things our mate does, for things that we have. Thank Him for all those things, you know. And when times get tough, and a lot of people think, oh, it's not applicable, that's exactly when it's applicable, because when things work to our success, be grateful when you get what you want, when you attain something you work for. But when things get hard and when you lose, be thankful for the lesson it teaches you. That's where the character's built, when we go through the difficult times. So you understand my point today. We are missing this in our life so much. Ephesians 5 and verse 20. We're told by the Apostle Paul, give thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. All things. Remember that all things come from God, that He is working with us in our lives. And, you know, whatever happens to us, good or seemingly bad to our physical nature, is going to be for our good. All things work together for good for those who love God. And so trust that. Believe in that. And be a grateful people, a thankful people. So Melody Beattie wrote something that I thought was really good. Gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more. It turns denial into acceptance, chaos to order, and confusion to clarity. It can turn a meal into a feast, a house into a home, and a stranger into a friend. Now look, it's not just nice poetry that I just read to you. It isn't. Colossians 3, if you will. Colossians 3. Giving thanks is mentioned 70 times, over 70 times in the Bible. The master of psychology, Derek Carpenter, states this, it's worth listening to. Gratitude doesn't need to be reserved only for momentous occasions. The benefits of practicing gratitude are nearly endless, he writes. People who regularly practice gratitude by taking time to notice and reflect upon the things they're thankful for, they experience more positive emotions. They're more alive. They sleep better, express more compassion and kindness, and even have stronger immune systems. That's science. That's what'll happen when you're a more grateful person. So I implore you to appreciate. I implore you to treasure God's blessings. But I ask you one more thing than that. And I ask you this. Thanksgiving can't just be words. It can't just be thank you. You know, our thanks to God's calling is just absolutely enormous, what He's done for us. The green earth and the blue sky and the clouds and the snow and the beautiful clouds and the beautiful warmth of the sun, the flowers, the trees, the lakes, the rivers, the animals that are on the earth are all magnificent creatures, all given to us, everything given to us, the food we eat every day given to us. And with all of that, the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and the hope that lies before us of one day being a part of the family of God, doesn't matter what we have to go through. It doesn't matter. Because it's such a wonderful gift and blessing from God. We should be thankful no matter what we experience. And so all of these things should be felt, but they have to be expressed in our actions, in our everyday actions. We should be thankful in our actions and be willing to give and help and serve other people as a reflection of that. Colossians 3 and verse 17. And whatsoever you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and the Father by him.